sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song, the melody.
Welcome to Subtle Beast, everybody. I am your host, Folt, sitting here with my co-host, Main Man. Partner in crime, Mr. Steve Apostolopoulos. How are you, brother?
Oh, I'm feeling good today, bro. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It's really hard for me to contain my excitement about tonight's podcast because I have to honestly say it's doing research on this has taken me by storm. But, the warm weather's coming upon us. Everything's getting better. We're going to start. Our days are getting longer. And I'm just really excited.
Yeah, man, this has been great. That time change from, living in darkness to finally getting a chance to be out in the light is great.
It really is, because I'll tell you what, I suffer from bad seasonal depression. I mean, I ultimately need to live where it's warm all year round. And something that I really have never done until now was go lay in a tanning bed for a little while. I know it's bad. They say it's bad, but I go in for like 6 minutes, like every other day, just to get out of seasonal depression. And you know what? It's really worked.
Well, dude, you look great.
Thank you.
Got some color to you.
Yeah, you need a little bit of color. I mean,
especially this time of year, you got to feel that feeling of the sunshine and that vitamin D.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So, we have put out some podcasts in the past. Well, our most recent one that we have put out was dealing with the secrets of the Illuminati, and that can go as deep as the rabbit hole goes. But we've also in the recent past did a podcast on Are We Living in a Simulation? Now, if you take both of those ideas and kind of mash them together, that could be the main topic of what we're going to be discussing tonight, because it involves the Illuminati. It involves a version of living in a simulation, and I have to say it's pretty crazy.
There's a lot there and I always love to see firsthand how our research gets shaped into the actual show. And to go through this, the rigors of the research that we did was an awesome trip.
Yeah, and considering that we had originally had something else lined up for today, but as the research for this podcast kept coming into us, we scrapped that one for another week, and we're going to put this one out. Now, what it is, if you are familiar in the types of unknown circles that Subtle Beast likes to cover, you may recognize this gentleman. He goes by the name of David Icke. And David Icke, I've been doing a lot of research on, but he has some theories that are so compelling that they very may well challenge everything that you've ever known to be true or to believe. And some people may think that that's a bad thing, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. Just because it's something that you believed, wouldn't you rather know the truth? Because as they say, the truth will set you free. Now, granted, it can, crumble you to some core, that your belief system, but you can be built back up in the truth. And I believe that that's what David Icke is attempting to do by informing the masses of what he has concluded. Now, he has a theory that has a lot, well, it's all focused on the planet Saturn. Now, the planet Saturn has been called a dwarf star, and that's not so untypical for our universe because there have been dwarf stars everywhere. However, in ancient people said that they can remember a time when we had two suns. One was the sun that we know today, and one being Saturn, which is now a dwarf star and is not in the same location. But This may get a little bit confusing, so we might just want to delve into Mr. Ike's research and try and explain how crazy Saturn really could or really is impacting our planet even to this day. So, very first thing right out of the gate, might Saturn really not be what we think it is? This is what David Icke stated. Saturn, it isn't what you think it is. Now, that statement alone hooked my curiosity and made me want to learn more about this theory. After all, if it isn't what I think it is, well, then what is it? While Icke's theories are exactly that, they are compelling, interesting, if nothing else. Perhaps more importantly, they also tend to hold their own against other theories in the same field, at times even serving to endorse them. Now, while the claims of Saturn really is Ike and many others are the sum of most out there, you are likely to hear, they are also some of the more intricately thought out and the ones that fit with other claims of alternate history. Now, indeed, once you start reading and researching into all aspects of the ringed planet, you could be forgiven for wanting to give such controversial theories as David Icke's another once over, if only to be sure that you heard the claims correctly. Now, there are numerous ties to Satanism within Saturn. At repeated use of logos that resemble the ring planet, and even how important Saturn seemingly is to secret societies, such as the Illuminati and the like, and they have roots stretching right all the way back to antiquity, maybe only the tip of the iceberg. Now, having said that, there is what is called the mega hex of Saturn. Now, one of our more remarkable discoveries that were made concerning Saturn were the results of the Voyager and the Cassini missions. When they photographed the planet close up for the first time in known history, the first Voyager images were stitched together. And while the quality is grainy to say the least, they allowed for the discovery of a strange anomaly at the North Pole of the planet. A perfectly shaped hexagon that became known as the Mega Hex of Saturn.
And it's huge.
It is extremely huge.
Those images are for real.
And it's been said time and time again by different scientists that for that to be a hexagon, well, that would have to state that right angles appeared naturally in nature and the universe. Now, that goes against everything that we've been taught. So, If they're not natural, then what are they?
Right, not six of them in a row.
Precisely.
Really, yeah, you got to check out an image of this. We'll put it up. The mega hex of Saturn doesn't look like it was naturally put there.
Exactly. Now, of course, it generally perplexed all the NASA scientists around the world because the structure appeared to be artificial. In other words, someone or something had seemingly built a huge, beyond megalithic structure at Saturn's North Pole. Even NASA's planetary scientist Kevin Baines told the TV show NASA's Unexplained Files that something is organizing this. Something is keeping this together. We just don't know what it is. Now, if you have a NASA planetary scientist going on NASA's Unexplained Files and saying something's organizing this and keeping it together, well, unless he's saying it's us,
right?
What other conclusion can you come to?
There's got to be someone or something else.
Exactly. Now, of course, conventional science and thinking doesn't allow for such theories. And after it had taken these images in November of 1980, the Voyager went streaking through the solar system and out towards Uranus and then Neptune. It would be further 24 years before another clear image of the anomaly was taken. June 2004, the Cassini space probe took more detailed images of the North Pole region of Saturn, and it did a similar pass of the planet to that of Voyager 2 half decades previously. Now, when these images were analyzed, they were revealed the exact same structure it had seen before. It wasn't a trick of light or due to reduced photo quality. The mega hex of Saturn, whatever it is very real. Although science, at least mainstream science, still doesn't know exactly what it is.
Imagine being there for those first pictures coming back in 2 decades later and seeing that same mega hex.
Right. And
I told you we weren't crazy.
I know. And it seems strange that something of this structure and these angles, that NASA would even let us see those images, because they had to assume that that's going to strike up all kinds of questions.
We're definitely going to need to get people up there and research that.
Well, just to give you an idea of how big it is, the inside of the hexagonal structure, within the border, we can fit 4 Earths inside that.
Saturn is huge.
Oh, it's absolutely immense.
I can't even really fathom how big it is. If you can fit 4 Earths just inside the North Pole's mega hex.
Well, I think it's hard to even think about how big our Earth is. And then to think 4 times that size is just the North Pole. Yes. And not the entire North Pole.
It's unreal that a celestial body can be that big. Saturn is just a huge, huge planet.
Well, there's been scientists that have seen structures out near Saturn, and relative to the rings, the size of these craft have come back to be immense. I think one was, it had to be at least 1,000 miles in length.
Oh, man. That's enough to put an entire species on.
Exactly. Now, getting back on to Saturn, we're going to talk about the naturally occurring radio waves coming from Saturn, or some might say subliminal messages coming from Saturn. Now, if you're not aware, Saturn does create electronic radio waves, and they're emitting from Saturn all the time that sound more manufactured than naturally occurring space noise. There appears to be several different radio waves being sent from the planet, with differences being noted from the south and north areas. Now, the pulses were picked up when the data sent back to Earth from Cassini probe was analyzed by scientists. These waves, which are not audible to the human ear, were converted by NASA and released online, much to the interest of space and alien enthusiasts alike. One curious listener, a musician and digital audio expert, Joost van Dyk, altered the pitch and tone of the signal. When he did so, it appeared as though the sound was intentional communication of some kind. He stated that the signals had very definite patterns to the ear, and they were not sliding in nature, as most other cosmic sounds are. Now, as you might imagine, lots of people heard various messages in the signal, but one offered deciphering particularly interesting, if only because, as we will see later, it fits in rather well with David Icke's theories. "You people are urged to drop the earthly impulse," was one of the messages that was deciphered. Now, whether that particular translation is correct or not, and what it is to mean, and that's obviously open for debate. Now, you can check out Joost van Dyk's video online and, draw your own conclusion. Now, what we want to do now is we're going to let you listen to the sounds that were captured from Saturn, and we're going to give you a good 30 seconds. It can be pretty eerie. Here we go. That sounds absolutely crazy.
There's something in there.
There is, and I to be honest, that doesn't sound like a sound that's like comforting and come here, everything's going to be all right. That is so ominous.
That's like soul irking.
It is, and it just seems like all I can picturing with that sound is like there's just something lurking right there. It's like, yeah. It's dangerous. You don't want to get near it.
There's a, I mean, it's definitely a transmission, and there's definitely information that is being pushed through that transmission. It's just that we haven't been able to decipher it yet.
Exactly. Now, there was a man, very smart man, named Emanuel Velikovsky, and in 1950, he was a controversial researcher and author. He released a book called Worlds in Collision, in which he expressed his belief that cataclysmic disasters spoken of in the Bible and many other ancient texts were very real events that our ancestors witnessed with their own eyes, and then documented them accordingly. His work, arguably, is one of great importance to conspiracy theorists of Saturn, and indeed, theories of alternate history as a whole that were later developed. Now, just one of these theories, in short, suggested that Venus was once part of the planet Jupiter. Now, according to Velikovsky, around 4,000 years ago, a huge explosion rocked Jupiter. So huge that it sent a huge mass that would eventually become Venus, soaring into space and towards the inner solar system. Now, as it traveled along, a tail of copper, red dust, and gas followed it. When the Earth came into contact with this slipstream around 1500 BC, the red dust entered the atmosphere, causing the blood rain to fall to the ground. Now, the Book of Exodus reads about this time, all the water that was in the Nile turned to blood. Well, not blood, but red rain. Now, as Venus passed, it caused a huge geological change on the Earth, including pulling the planet off of its axis. Now, Velikovsky cited that Kashinawa of Brazil, who wrote Heaven and Earth Change Places, he even theorized that Moses and the parting of the waters as he led the Israelites was likely the result of gravitational and electromagnetic forces between the two planets. And that's pretty interesting because I hadn't heard of that before concerning Moses with the gravitational and electromagnetic forces between the two planets. But I had heard theories that Moses and the way that he was interpreted in the Bible wasn't exactly accurate. They were trying to say that they thought that Moses may have actually been the brother of Tutankhamun. In Egypt, and that, and if it wasn't King Tut, it might have been the ruler before that. They think that he might have been the brother of, and he was sent out of Egypt with what today is called the Ark of the Covenant. People said that it contained the Ten Commandments, but what I had heard in different documentaries and different things that I had read, that so he was sent out with quote unquote the Ark of the Covenant, but what was inside that was actually alien technology, and that Moses and King Tut were actually either full extraterrestrial or that they were hybrids. And that's where the story of Moses and the Israelites in the desert for 40 years, and that he was actually, trying to take and hide this alien technology. But
I like that one too, man.
Yeah. I mean, the
I love the physics behind it, where they're actually explaining how red rain could realistically be, in the Earth's atmosphere. It's the tail, from the copper and the red dust from the break-off of the planet Jupiter.
Right, right. So, well, let's just keep going. Further cosmic cataclysmic events and the claims. Although Venus settled into a stable orbit around 1400 BC, by 800 BC, its path came too close to Mars, not only causing catastrophic damage to the red planet, but also nudging it into an orbit that clashed with Earth's every 15 years for over a century before it settled into its current orbit in 687 BC. Mainstream scientists universally were appalled by this claim, and they collectively shunned him and his work. Now, It should be noted that many of Velikovsky's theories that were mercilessly mocked and dismissed at the time have since been proven very true. And you know what? This isn't the first time that people of this caliber and of this intelligence have made claims, and it's been mocked and they've been crucified in the media. And a guy named Bob Lazar, who anybody in the UFO field knows who that is. So he came out in the 1980s talking about the projects at Area 51 and all the deep projects. And he was talking about the alien craft that the government had in possession. And he said that the way that these craft achieve flight without sound is with something called Unpentium or element 115. Well, at the time, I think we were only at like element 112. So they thought that he was crazy. But within 10 to 15 years, they came across element 115 being Unpentium. And all of a sudden, Bob Lazar didn't seem too crazy anymore.
Right. We mock what we don't understand.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. So let's see. Okay. A decade after Velikovsky made his claim that the surface temperatures of Venus were indeed to be proven almost 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit, hot enough to melt lead. It also should be noted that many of Velikovsky's theories that were mercilessly mocked and dismissed not only have since been proven true. For example, is his claim that Venus would have soaring temperatures on the surface, like we said, was proven to be almost 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit, enough to melt lead. But of course, that claim was mocked. He also predicted that Jupiter and its fellow gas giant Saturn emitted substantial radio noise, and that the planets likely had the ability to heat themselves from within. Both of these points have again since been proven to be correct, which takes us back to Saturn and its quote-unquote true history. Now, what that reminded me of right there, talking about Jupiter and Saturn being able to heat themselves from within, there's been many scientists that have come to the conclusion and even say that it's an actual fact that the planets, not only in our solar system, but other solar systems, are actually conscious themselves, and that they actually do have a gender to them. Hence, that's why we refer to Earth as Mother Earth and she, and that and Saturn isn't the only planet that emits sounds. All of the planet, I mean, there's tons of sounds coming from the Earth. When you listen to what the Earth sounds like, it just sounds like one big radio transmission. But they all make sounds, but not quite like what Saturn sounds like. It's really eerie. Now, the question could be asked, could Saturn actually be the elusive planet X, or also known as Nibiru? Now, this could be interesting. According to some, Saturn is not a planet at all, but a dead star that had served at one point in time as the second sun in our solar system, a primary sun at that. Now, this is somewhat backed up, albeit by interpretation, of many ancient writings and texts, in particular ancient Sumerian texts. Now, Zechariah Sitchin claimed to have translated many Sumerian clay tablets that told the story of extraterrestrial race called the Anunnaki, who came to Earth thousands of years ago. Through interbreeding and genetic engineering, they began the human race as we know it. Now, we have we have talked about Sitchin and his claims of the Anunnaki previously, and theories are interesting to say the least. Now, one of the claims he made was that the Anunnaki's home planet was Nibiru, a huge celestial body whose whereabouts is known, but on course to enter Earth's orbit at some time in the future, a claim that has spawned a culture all of its own, which makes me think, I mean, different things. If this is the actual truth, that there's going to be some time in the future that Nibiru is going to come into, you know, contact or come into close proximity of the Earth, could that be why lots of different things are being ramped up in the UFO extraterrestrial fields, or Is it, you know, different theories? I don't know. I just don't know. But now, these Sumerian records show what Sitchin claims to be the symbol of this home planet as the sun with six stars around it. Might it be possible, given that Saturn is claimed to be a dead sun, that Nibiru, the home of the Anunnaki, is in fact Saturn itself? The Babylonians incidentally referred to Saturn as being the ghost of a sun. Furthermore, although it does indeed have hundreds of small moons, six main moons orbit the ring planet. Perhaps even the rings of Saturn were mistaken for wings, because Nibiru's claimed to have a winged appearance in the sky. And so it was described a long time ago. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, when they talk about the Anunnaki, it always makes me think of the Native Americans. I mean, they always spoke of the Anunnaki, and I believe that their translation of Anunnaki was like ant people, because these beings kind of resembled ants. And I mean, I guess maybe if you'd look at like a gray, I mean, you could get that. Or was it like the reptilian, and they look, the way they look like ants. Not sure. Now, this part is what's, we're just going to, we've entitled just Don't Go There. And you'll see why later. Given that David Icke, who also subscribes to the theory that the Anunnaki were very real, he claims they were slash are the reptilians that he has written about for some time. The connections with Saturn are intriguing. When combined with his theories of what Saturn actually is, as Icke himself likes to say, the dots begin to connect themselves. Now, although we at Subtle Beast, we encourage you to read Icke's full research on this subject. He's got lots of videos out there on YouTube that'll just knock your socks off. And do some research on all of his works, if only to take on board another perspective. What we will present right now is like the Reader's Digest version of the basics of his Saturn theory and where it fits with the larger conspiracy. Before we move on to that, however, just a quick mention of an interesting side conspiracy in its own right. While it's one thing to suggest that an aforementioned Sitchin may have simply been incorrect in his translations, there is a video online containing footage that implies he intentionally lied or misled his readers with his translations, and what's more, it offers why. Now, why do we not offer this theory as proof as of this in any way? Well, it's an interesting perspective, and it also fits in somewhat with Icke's claim that Sitchin's response to him as to why he had left out any references to serpent gods and reptilians in his work was simply, don't go there. Icke made this claim in his book, The Biggest Secret, and stated that he took the response more as a warning than anything else. Well, I think that goes true, which if someone looks at you and says, don't go there, they're either saying, hey, that's way too personal, that offends me, or they're saying, don't go in there.
Yeah, I know what's there.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Because, you know, I always just think when someone says, don't go in there, don't go into the dark, because you might not be seen again, or you don't know what's in there. I do, and I can't say, because I don't want to go in there.
Right, right.
So, but you know what? This is just, we're just getting started here. This is just about to start, you know, blowing some minds. And then we're going to discuss David Icke's quote-unquote matrix theory. Okay. Now, in his book, The Biggest Secret, Icke speaks in depth of how it is his belief that understanding the energy of the universe and all its dimensions is the key to understanding everything else that comes from it, including his belief of reptilian bloodlines controlling the earth. And, you know, I was telling Stephen pre-show that, you know, it's not so crazy to think that we have reptilian bloodlines. As a matter of fact, I was watching an interview with Obama, and Obama referenced, it must just have to do with, you know, our reptilian brains. And he wasn't joking. So, I mean, it's not a crazy theory. including his belief that reptilian bloodlines controlling the earth. Incidentally, Nikola Tesla, regarded as one of the greatest minds in history, famously stated that if you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. And if anybody out there is a proponent for the law of attraction, well, that would just fit perfectly in there. Where attention goes, energy flows. Now, Ike describes these dimensions as radio waves, and that we as humans tune into them, in our case, to the third dimension, which is our perception of reality. Other dimensions, however, exist all around us at the same time, only we can't see them as we are not tuned into them. Something that Ike believes all humans have the power to do, but most lack the know-how. Those that do manage to do this, we tend to call psychics, although in reality, they are simply tuning in to a fourth or fifth dimension. Now, speaking of psychics, we were in email exchange with a psychic, and I brought the idea up to Steve because this one specific psychic had mentioned that, you know, she has a lot of knowledge of the Akashic Records, and that was a podcast that we had covered. And I pitched Steve the idea, and at first he was like, I got to be honest with you, that really scares me. And but if we do it, as long as she doesn't tell me when I'm going to die, we'll be fine. And I'm sure we'll make that a prerequisite.
Yes, she's going to... I'm going to walk in there. She's going to be like, 7 years, 6 months, 12 days.
I'm like, so long.
It's the only thing I didn't want to know.
Right. But I think it's very interesting that because I'm a firm believer in frequency and vibration and energy, and they're talking about radio waves. And
well, I also love the connection between, and this next part explains the difference and how different dimensions are present at the same time, mm-hmm. but we aren't tuned into them.
Well, sure, because as far back as, you know, human or mankind can go, when someone would pass away, someone would always say, don't worry, they're right there with you. And, you know, and there has been psychics and mediums that have said, you know, your loved one sitting there with you right now. Well, if you go along with this theory, they are right there. You just can't physically touch them or see them because you're just not on the same vibration at that time.
Right. Sometimes your senses become heightened and you can almost be aware of their presence. You can kind of feel their energy.
Yeah, that chill up your spine.
Yeah.
That's a radio frequency. That's an energy frequency. You're feeling that. Your intuition.
It's very real.
It most certainly is. Now, moving along, it is worth bearing in mind that our eyes can only see around 0.0035% of the light spectrum, which is basically light energy. The rest is completely invisible to us. This is the same with sound and any other form of energy. It is not unfeasible that other worlds and dimensions could be all around us, but we just can't see, hear them, or sense them. Now, Ike asserts that the reptilians, or the Anunnaki, operate in the fourth dimension and are all, for intents and purposes, invisible to us until they reveal themselves or step from their dimension into ours. Now, if we were to say that the Anunnaki or the reptilians are one of the races that people have seen their crafts here on Earth, and they always say they just seem to be like a ball of light and that they were there the 1 second and then they just went out. Well, according to this belief or this theory, they could just be like, okay, go gadget, not be seen anymore. And it just looks like the light goes out, but they just changed. They didn't go anywhere. They just changed their signal.
They changed into another dimension. They blipped
right
from our dimension into another dimension.
Exactly. Which, when I hear of that type of technology, it makes me think, how old is this civilization?
Right.
I mean, if they've been around, you know, helping out with, you know, the pyramids, and they're talking about, you know, 1500 years BC, and it's interesting. Now, Ike, he further believes that a broadcast of energy conceived and delivered by the Anunnaki / reptilians is essentially a matrix, a reality designed specifically for us. The human eye, in turn, the brain, then has to interpret that energy and present us with an image of what we are seeing. Ike believes it is that energy that is being manipulated and so broadcasting to us a false or preconceived reality. Now, what he's saying is he doesn't believe that us as human beings were a computer system. He's not saying that. I think he's more saying that instead of us actually being a computer program, it's like we're living with virtual reality glasses on, to say it best. Now, Ike is stating and always will stand up for what he believes as far as Saturn, that it is a gigantic broadcasting system. Now, essentially, Saturn, which Ike, like Velikovsky, argues is a dwarf star and was once a sun, is sending radio waves out into space, which are ultimately concentrated on and picked up by our moon. Now, we have mentioned on podcasts in the past, opinions on the moon, whether it's an artificial structure, if it's a satellite, if it's a space station like the Death Star. And the more and more research that's being done on it, it's starting to lead that it might not just be a naturally occurring moon. The moon acts as a kind of amplifier in order to strengthen the signal, is what Ike is saying, which is then broadcast to the Earth, and so forming our reality. In Ike's words, Saturn is a gigantic broadcasting system. Now, might this explain, then, why the moon has a dark side in the first place? Now, you have to remember, it is the only moon to always present the same side to its host, or its tidal locked with Earth. Now, was this intentionally calculated so that it would pick up these signals from Saturn? Does it then project them through its other side, the side that always faces the Earth, and so that it can alter or present a reality to us as humans? If we accept such a theory, even as being remotely possible, then might this explain why there has been no attempts made to explore the dark side of the moon? Or maybe why the Apollo missions were canceled so suddenly, despite the fact that they were actually effectively and already had been paid for. Now, Ike also states that it is his belief that the rings of Saturn are artificial. He cites the research of Norman Berggren, who in his book, The Ringmakers of Saturn, argued that there was an intense electrical activity within the rings, almost as if it were being generated in the rings themselves. Ike believes this activity is the result of electronic broadcasting waves that are being sent purposely from the planet and the rings to indeed aid those radio waves. Now, there is symbolism all around us. It dates back thousands and thousands of years of sun worship. But the sun that they're referring to in our history books or in religion, they're really referring to Saturn at the time. And there is so much symbolism all around the world that, well, you know what? We'll get into that. Let's talk a little bit about the symbolism. Ike is not alone in his belief that Saturn is a lot more than it appears to be. The fact, if you subscribe to such theories, that it creates and gives us our reality is why it appears to be worshipped by those in positions of power. The Anunnaki? All people around the world in high positions of power. And what's more, it has been for thousands and thousands of years. Now, indeed, there appears to be symbols of Saturn everywhere. As always hidden in plain sight, many famous logos and brands, even to the exchanging of rings at weddings, It's said to be in honor of Saturn, who was also referred to as the Lord of the Rings. What's more, Saturn itself has links to Satan and Satanism, not least of which is the obvious similarity between is the words Satan and Saturn, a connection that Icke and many other researchers have also made with the Anunnaki and reptilians. Now what else? The Black Cube, which is said to go back to ancient times and the worship of ancient deity El, or Saturn. It also has of particular relevance to the planet. The dimensions of this black cube also fit perfectly into the megahex of Saturn, which some claim is what it represents. Now, incidentally, these black cubes are found all over the world, outside important buildings that many researchers will tell you are owned by important secret society figures. So, if you're thinking to yourself, well, what exactly? Well, what type of black cubes? Well, when we say that they're everywhere, and it, not only is it just the black cube, but the color black and the color red are also intertwined with Saturn and it actually being representation of evil. Now, you look at things like someone wearing a black cloak, like a judge, for instance. And also, what does the judge have in his hand? He has a gavel. Well, that gavel is also a sign of Saturn. And we'll try and explain this a little bit better, but the hammer and sickle that are on the Russian flag are also interpretations of Saturn. And Steve, why don't you tell a little bit about what we were discussing as far as the family with the red shield.
Right. So in our history, we have a very famous family that ties into a lot of the research that we do, and that's the Rothschild family.
That's right.
Now, back in Germany, when the Rothschild family just started, before they even got into the banking realm, they were known as the Bauer family.
That's right.
But they did change their name to the Red Shield, literally translated to Rothschild. Right. Red Shield was a symbolism for the planet of Saturn.
Because it had six-pointed star.
Right, and that became their family's symbol.
Right, and the Rothschilds, which I was shocked to find out, they're actually responsible for the creation of the Soviet Union and
of
Russia.
The country Russia, right.
So like we said, that hammer and sickle on there are Saturn are symbols of Saturn. The sickle is to represent not only death carried by the Grim Reaper, but also as a cradle that the horizon of Saturn sits upon. So they say that if you see any old historic buildings with pillars on them, that those pillars are representative of Saturn, because those pillars hold the up or the sickle when it's inverted, as it's cradling the planet Saturn. And these six-sided stars or hexagons are everywhere in our culture. The Rothschilds, believe it or not, are actually responsible for the creation of Judaism. I mean, the Israeli flag, it has the Star of David on it. Look at things like a sheriff's badge.
Same six-pointed
star. And why? Because he is to, in a lot of ways, to instill fear and be intimidating, or is in lawful. He can tell you what to do. Because what Icke believes is that these deities or these Anunnaki, that they don't have a creative side to, well, quote unquote, their DNA. They can't really be creative without a vessel. Well, that's what we are. Mankind is their vessel, so that they provide us with just enough of a visionary or types of energy that we can use to be creative. And so they also thought, well, when they're being creative, why don't we create a monetary system? Because if we can create an actual money system, when these people will become more creative, if they can have this incentive of this money, and every time this money exchanges hands from one individual to the next all around the globe, all this energy is connecting, because everything is energy, everything is resonating. And if people are becoming creative and people are going after this money, then people are going to be becoming greedy and start turning on each other and want to start going to war to get even more money, which is the whole basis behind the reptilian brain, which is always saying fight or flight or take what's yours and just war amongst each other. It's a typical reptilian thought process.
And Saturn's symbolism goes even further. Saturn Saturday.
That's right.
One of the days of the week is actually named after the symbolism of Saturn. It's just intertwined in our culture to the point where we don't even know what's what. That all-seeing eye on the dollar bill turned upside down equals a pentagon or a hexagon.
Right. And they said that the term the weekend, because you're weakened.
You need a weekend because you're weakened.
Yep. You just depleted so much energy by being creative in this monetary system that is only feeding these deities.
And what's behind the entire monetary system? The Rothschilds.
The Rothschilds from the get-go.
Circling back around to them.
Yeah. And as far as black cubes, symbolism in the world, well, the D-Wave quantum computer, the most powerful computer in the world right now, big black cube. You ever hear of the company Gateway? They have a big cube. It's like cow-patched. Well, one that's probably the biggest and maybe even most concern would be the black cube of Mecca. They circle the big black cube in Mecca in prayer. In circle, similar to Saturn's rings, maybe? There was also an episode of Star Trek where the Borg cube just happened to be passing by Saturn, of all planets. And it goes even further than the Israelites in Judaism. I mean, some of the things even in Christianity, the word Solomon, every part of the word Solomon, Sol, on, all mean Saturn or sun. And if it's referring to sun, it's so old that it's referring to
the old sun.
Right. Now, the black cube of Islam is called the Kaaba. That means cube. Somebody said, why was Christ crucified on a cross? Well, if you take a cross and you flatten it out, it could be constructed into a cube form. So I saw so many interesting interpretations or examples of these symbols everywhere. And there was this picture I looked at online and saw like episodes of SpongeBob and The Simpsons and just TV shows. And it's just like, wow, it's like, you know, the Eye of Ra is everywhere, or some symbolism of Saturn in a cube, or it's pretty crazy. Now, what else is interesting? Scientists are saying that 98% of our DNA is junk DNA. But according to Ike, it seems to be the blueprint to pick up on a signal from Saturn that is then passed to our moon and then is creating false images and a false reality and a thought process and just being projected down into us. So we may not know exactly when we're looking up at the stars at night. Well, is that space? Is that outer space, or is that a projection of something else to keep us distracted, to keep us creative, and to keep us in the cycle? David Icke had said, you know, you think of the rat race, the circle. You wake up, you go to breakfast, you go to work, which is usually a sandwich, which is a square, and then you're a cube, and then you come home and you go to bed, and then you do the whole thing. It's just we're basically slaves, kind of like he was explained to Neo in The Matrix. He said, everything you see and feel, I mean, you can see it, you can feel it, but it's not there. It's false. Do you want to know the reality? I don't know if he definitely wanted to know after he chose it, because right.
It was a much harsher reality.
Yeah, it definitely was. But
I like the symbolism of the goat and the goat head and Moloch.
Oh, right.
The Bilderberg group worships the Moloch figure.
Right, and they also I believe it's an owl with that grove, Bohemian Grove, which is another symbolism of Saturn. But you are right. I mean that Moloch or everybody's probably familiar with the famous goat head that's supposed to represent Satan or does represent Satan in that type of religion, and it all goes back to Saturn,
symbols of Saturn,
and the goat, and then the bull and the horns. That
symbol
is
Saturn,
symbol of Saturn. And where is one of the biggest displays of a bull? Right out in front of Wall Street, which I think we could all probably agree on is probably,
I got some great pictures of that when I was there.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, it goes back to the symbols of Saturn and Saturn and Satan. And there's a lot of combinations there. There's a lot of interconnections.
There is.
What's going on?
There is. And what I would urge you to do is to go out and check out some of Ike's lectures, because he brings some things up, even talking about Judaism, just talking about just basically every religion collectively. But he also breaks some things down in Christianity that, you know, maybe you want to be the judge of. You know, I've always been raised a Christian. Some of the things that he had to say in his lecture were very challenging to hear, because it's like, wow, I was raised a Christian to these beliefs, but also I can see where you're coming from. I can see why you would say what you're saying, why your theory is the way that it is.
Right. And it helps to explain just parts of the cosmos and the nature of Mother Earth and the winter solstice, the summer solstice, the autumnal equinoxes. They're all parts of nature and how the flow of nature and the universe works together.
Precisely. Energy. We're all energy. Well, I'll tell you what. This is probably going to be a subject that we're going to have to revisit at another time.
Oh, yeah. This could have been a 10-hour podcast.
Oh, yeah. As if you're a regular listener of ours, you probably always hear me talk about my man, Steve Greer, which I'm always doing research on and seeing what he's up to. But you know what? David Icke is going to be in my rotation with a lot of information and study going down. So you might get... You might hear Greer and Ike, that they might be the start of like my dream team or something like that. But I enjoyed tonight's podcast. I think it's thoroughly interesting. We're not trying to push any type of belief system. We're just trying to give you out the different theories that are out there that when you take a good close look, they don't seem too far off. So that's why we say definitely go out and, you know, you be the judge, do the research. We're helping you. We're pointing you in the right direction, but ultimately you're going to have to make the decision on what you think is accurate. And is Saturn the key to,
well, I mean, if
everything,
if Saturn's getting remotely pushed onto us from the moon, I hear it all the time. I can feel the moon. I can feel when the moon's full.
Right.
My energy levels spike when the moon's full. If I get cut, I bleed more when the moon's full. Those things are all part of the equation.
Well, sure. Because if the moon's full, it's giving you a better satellite of the signal.
Transmission, right.
That eerie transmission. I mean, just think if that's what you are receiving, I mean, that's basically what's haunting the human body. Because if you've ever heard somebody on TV or even in real life talk about a near-death experience where they left their body and they went to the light and they had no pain, they had no anger, they had no frustration. Well, because they left their body, which that DNA structure was susceptible to that signal,
feeling, that emotion, right?
Yeah. And once you left that body, you are now you have left the simple third dimension and can travel within and out of any dimension.
Right. You have your consciousness, but you don't feel those emotions that were left with your body.
Right. Exactly right.
Very powerful stuff, man.
It is. Very interesting. I loved it. It was so important to me that at the 11th hour, I told Steve, the podcast, we got to scrap it and do this one. We got to do this one first. So not to say that the podcasts that we have coming up are going to be anything less than spectacular, but sometimes, you know, I get a little ADD or a little ADHD and something gets in my mind and I'm like, I got to roll with this because it's all I can think about.
Well, so. Yeah, and there's so much there. After, you know, we started looking at Saturn, we just kept going down the rabbit hole. We just kept finding out more and more about it. So if you got something that, you know, we might not have mentioned in the podcast about Saturn, please post it up on our Facebook.
Definitely, definitely. Let's keep this conversation going between not only ourselves, but you and your friends and family. If you have anybody that you're thinking or that you think it could be benefit from the topics that we talk about, just from a perspective of just helping to expand their mind just a little bit, share this podcast with it.
Man, we got tons of great stuff coming up in the future.
We certainly do. We look forward to it. And until then, I'm Foltz.
And I'm Steve.
And we'll see you next time. Take care of one another. Bye-bye.